Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Well, happy Thanksgiving. It is that time of the week, no doubt. And welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I'm really glad that you are here. I've got my turkey on already. We've got an event tonight, and I use those oilless fryers. I am your voice of the industry. I'm your industrial cheerleader, and I really take pride in bringing you industrial lifeguards to get you out of that corporate riptide. Welcome, everyone. We've got a jam-packed show this week. We've got a lot to discuss, so I'm going to get right into it. We've got a BCI Alliance update. I've got an article here that I want to highlight, and it really just sort of digs into the challenges that we have from a workforce perspective, and I think that it's relevant, and I think that it's important for everyone to sort of hear that, as well as we've got an interview with Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon, and he's going to talk a lot about asset management. I'm telling you, man, it was difficult to get that gentleman on the Industrial Talk podcast, but we did. He's got a ton of information. I mean, it was a great interview, and he understands asset management. And what's great about Mr. Terrence is the fact that he is passionate. So anyway, before we get into that, I'm just honored. I've been approached by IMC 2017, which is the International Maintenance Conference, and this is at the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point in Bonita Springs, and we're going to be podcasting live from that particular event, and it is going to be December 11th through the 15th, and that's in Naples, Florida, and really honored to be able to do that. And we're going to have a lot of fun, and there's going to be a lot of people there. We're going to interview as many people as we possibly can. And if you want to be on this show, if you want to be interviewed on the Industrial Talk podcast, well, just let me know. That there's really no criteria. You just got to be passionate about what you do. And so very honored, and I'm looking really forward to that. So on to Terrence O'Hanlon. No. Excuse me, because I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to talk to you about BCI Alliance and sort of this update, and it's in their BCI magazine, and it is for, let me look at it, it is November, and it talks about workforce infrastructure issues, challenges in the petrochemical growth. And this is written by a young lady by the name of Nancy Ford. She's a contributing writer to the magazine. By the way, you want to get information about anything industrial? This company, this BCI Alliance, is where you need to be. Now, I can go out there and I can sit there and rifle through and do all the stuff that I need to try to find content, but this company is passionate. They are passionate about the industrial space. They are passionate about content. Their publication is second to none. They highlight just every aspect of the industrial world, shall we say, and it is global, and the articles are well written, and but you know the best part about BCI Alliance, they're wonderful people. I had a wonderful meeting with them last week, and every single one are really nice people, and I highly recommend if you ever go to conferences and you see BCI Alliance, and just give them a shout out, because man, they're really passionate about what they do, and they love the industry, and I got to tell you, they really love people. So this article, Workforce Infrastructure Issues Challenge Petrochemicals Growth, and it highlights, among others, there's a number, but one of the things that really jumped out at me, because we're all about learning, we're all about content, we're all about really promoting, you know, being a cheerleader of the industrial space, promoting the benefits, the values, the just trying to bring back cool to the industrial space again, because it is a great industry. And Miss Nancy Ford interviewed a gentleman by the name of Earl Sharp. He's the vice president of Dow Chemical. Begins an apprenticeship program. So they recognize that there's a challenge out there. And quote, this is what he says, I would suggest that may be one of the biggest threats we have to continued growth within our industry, he said. Does anybody have any abundance of electricians or pipe fitters or welders? We don't, right? And he's got that question mark. Those are skilled trade workers are very rare at this point in time. That is amazing because we have an opportunity to really just springboard our economy. And at that at the base of that is our industrial, you know, sector. And finally, this little tidbit of information really jumped out. If you do have a $1 billion project, roughly half will be labor, of course. So if your labor construction, if your labor to construct a new facility, about 10% hits because of product or speed or because of lack of available quality human power. That means if we don't have the right people, there's like this 10% hit. And 10% of $500 million is a substantial amount of money. So anyway, I would, if I were you, make it a point, if you are a if you're dedicated to education, if you're dedicated to contributing to the industrial space, I would definitely direct you to the BCI magazine, BCI Alliance online. They've got content out there that anything. So if you have an interest in whatever, I guarantee you the BCI Alliance, as well as the magazine, has that information. You can get that content with absolutely no problem. So wonderful people, wonderful magazine. They really work hard to provide you with great content. Now on to this week's interview. I briefly mentioned Terrence O'Hanlon. Now, he is, of course, he's certified. He is the publisher of ReliabilityWeb.com. ReliabilityWeb.com. Make sure you note that. And, of course, he's out there on Facebook. He's out there on LinkedIn, of course, and very, very active within the asset management space. He's a member of number of organizations. He is a thought leader when it comes to asset management, and he is passionate and dedicated to the craft of asset management. And as we just mentioned in that article, there's got to be some way of doing more with less. And Terrence, the strategies that they support and deploy and recommend definitely gets you a greater length, life out of your assets, but you do more with less. And if we're stretched and challenged by labor and skilled craftsmen, there's craftspeople, then we've got to really take this stuff seriously. And Terrence is by far one of the most knowledgeable. I've got a background in asset management, but nothing compared to what Terrence has. So I was very honored to be able to get Terrence on the Industrial Talk podcast. He made time in his busy schedule. They're all over the place. They're all over the world. They're flying everywhere. So here we go. I'd like to introduce Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon. He is the founder, publisher of Reliability Web and the magazine called Reliability Magazine and Uptime. Enjoy. All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. My name is Scott McKenzie, and I'm really glad that you are here specifically for this particular podcast. We've got a gentleman by the name of Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon. I said that right, Terrence?
Yes, you did.
Fantastic, because I have a tendency to butcher last names. Also first, in fact, I am an equal opportunity name butcherer. So, Terrence, I really appreciate your schedule, finding time in your schedule, because you have been all over the place doing asset management stuff, which is near and dear to my heart. And for our listeners, Terrence, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. And it's really a pleasure to be here and be a guest on
pleasure. Ha ha.
No, fantastic. So a little bit about me, I guess. I'll start at the top. I work with people who advance reliability and asset management. That's what really gets me excited. I have a business that has three lines. It has publishing. We have a magazine called Uptime Magazine that's printed and in digital form. We have ReliabilityWeb.com, who started in the mid-90s in the dot-com boom, that's in English and Spanish and a very deep body of knowledge on reliability and asset management. And we publish about 150 books on reliability and asset management. We have a second line of business that's conferences. So we do the International Maintenance Conference. It's in its 32nd year, coming up in December in Florida. You've got to get you down there. Maybe you can do some live podcasts.
Would you be willing to do that? Because I'd do that in a doggone heartbeat. And it's because it's Florida. What the heck? Why wouldn't I?
Let's talk. Maura will get in touch with you and get that. I think that would be a good idea.
Oh, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
All right, good. Where are you? Where am I talking?
Well, this is Mandeville, Louisiana, but because we're podcasting, it's all over the world.
I got you. Okay, terrific. Well, I love Louisiana. So we have a conference business. We do three large public conferences, and this where you were saying we're going all over. We do about 15 sort of private by invitation asset owner events around the world in major international cities. Singapore, London, Melbourne, that type of thing. And then the third line of business that sort of makes us a little unique and unusual is that we created a framework for reliability and asset management. So almost an implementation system. And there's about 1,800 certified professionals on the system and maybe 1,000 companies that use it either very deeply or at least casually. They borrow things from
I hate to interrupt real quick. Now you've got a publishing company, you've got a conference entity, and then of course you've got a framework for asset management. Is that correct? That's sort of the 1-2-3s.
That's the 1-2-3. You said it so much more efficiently than I did.
Yeah, it's because I need to, because of my little brain. Let's put it that way. I've got to package it up. Now, Terrence, do you just cross industry with this particular framework or this asset management model? Do you focus in on petrochemical, manufacturing? What is it across the board?
It is absolutely across the board. Takes us into some very interesting opportunities. Everything from, NASA, the space agency, to, Singapore Mass Transit, to London Underground, to, people who manufacture peanut butter.
And let's say for me, I do have a company, but it's not as impressive as your efforts. You come to me and you say, asset management is important for me because why?
Well, there's lots of reasons for it. The practice of asset management, I've been working with ISO, the International Organization for Standardization. We've created a standard called ISO 55001. Now, if I was going to answer you from that, the idea of asset management is a coordinated set of activities to realize value from your assets. Now that may seem sort of obvious because, let's just say your asset is your automobile or your home. You take pretty good care of it in general and you get value out of it. But for some reason, when you collect, $1 billion for the physical assets in one place, the issue of ownership and pride and operational excellence and all kinds of other external factors enter into it, make operating it as efficiently as you might operate your car a challenge. So there's safety reasons to do it, there's environmental reasons to do it, and there's economic reasons to do it. And then maybe the most important, there's quality of life issues around asset management. So it makes the world a better place.
But see, here's the challenge I have. And I've been down the road of real focused asset management activities. And what I find and what I have found is that companies got a sort of a quarterly look at their financials. And what you're asking them to do is have a concerted or focused effort on managing those assets in an effective way so that you get greater longevity. I'm just sort of throwing it out there. And companies are not really, and I've been in this because I ran a terminal company and you sweat the assets. Do you find companies today beginning to more embrace? I understand it's proven science, for lack of a better term, that doing this impacts and positively impacts the bottom line. but it's still getting that focus from the company to say, I want to invest here because I know tomorrow I will save money. Are you getting buy-in on that?
Well, I mean, you know, your point's well taken. There's a lot of pressure that derives from Wall Street and the financial community to deliver, you know, to deliver 90-day results. And, you know, if you have an asset that's optimized for 30 years or 10 years or even 5 years, you know, that's not optimized when you try to divide the value delivery into 90-day increments. There's a couple ways to answer that. You know, the companies that are very short-term focused, they don't tend to have good asset management strategies and policies. They're not mutually exclusive. In other words, if you create a solid asset management plan and program that goes beyond the typical business planning cycle, it's quite possible you'll create superior quarterly results. It's very difficult to drive long-term thinking, though, if your eye is only on short-term financial results.
Yeah, but now, in all of these efforts, these 1, 2, 3 efforts, do you provide any consulting? Does a company come to you, Terrence, and your group and say, okay, I've been reading your publication, I've gone to your conferences, and I like that framework, right? Can you come in and begin let's say I'm a big company and let's start biting off this elephant. We haven't been doing it well. We want to start going down that road. Does your framework allow for that transition, that mindset, that asset-centric mindset of going into that asset management world?
Well, sort of that's what it is. It's a first wave approach. So we don't really call it consulting. So we have the framework is designed to install a consistent language at its lowest level. Anything that's to be mastered, and that includes reliability and asset management, but, you know, it would include brain surgery, it would include oil painting, it would include gourmet cooking. It begins with the acquisition of a specialized language, the words, the phrases, the concepts around that. And what we find is there's a lot of inconsistent language. If you were getting brain surgery and the surgeon, you know, you heard the surgeon say, give me that sharp, steely thing over there, you might get a little bit nervous. And so we try at the lowest level is to start installing it as a language, because it's cross-functional at the end of the day. It's not an engineering function. It's not a maintenance function. You know, it's a business function. So you need non-technical people to understand the framework. So we sort of do awareness, we do knowledge, we do desire, and then we've got an ecosystem of partners who deliver consulting services, software, technology, instruments, sensors, you know, anything you can imagine to drive efficiency from assets. We sort of draw the line at that delivery. We're more on the awareness, the desire, and the front-end knowledge, and then we pass it to deeper practitioners and consultants to do the actual delivery.
I like that term, ecosystem of partners. That is pretty doggone good. Now, I've been in the industrial space. I've been, knowledge in the utility space, and when you're talking this framework, this for lack of a better term, Terrence, this information, because you're all about information, you're all about content, the way I look at it, and that value-added content, which is very great. Okay, that's without a doubt. I'm all about education. The thing that I would see is that, okay, in the petrochemical world, they look at assets this way, and they've got these type of assets, these type of valves, pumps, monitors, this, that, and we gain this type of data, and we make decisions off of that type of data, and so on and so forth. And then if you go and you say, I'm going into a food environment, a food manufacturing environment, it's a completely different type of world. And although maybe they've got pumps and valves and all that good stuff, they're different than the pumps and valves to a certain extent. How do you take that reality and make it germane to petrochemical, food, whatever, chemical, and so on?
Yeah, understood. It is a great question. There's really a couple ways I could dance around that answer. One is there's some things that are common in reliability and asset management across those industries. there are some things that are very unique. So, you know, there's in the framework, the common things are what, you know, what's the aim of the organization? You know, to make the world's best peanut butter at an affordable cost, or, you know, so, okay, once we know what the aim is, what assets are critical for the delivery of that aim, and then what are the ways those assets can fail, and we can develop sort of strategy out of that. Once we start to dive into the strategy and policy side of things, now we can start to add the criteria that's important to our organization to make the right kind of decisions. So, you know, what you're really getting at with the question is there's different criteria that drives importance and drives priority in different kinds of industries and even within the same industry in different organizations. So what we try to provide is a sort of a consistent set of technical activities, but it's flexible enough to embed in whatever business processes exist to make decisions. And if it's lacking a business process to make decisions, then we add the business processes to make decisions. And the problem is the decision making in most organizations is locked up at the highest level. But the reality is people are making decisions every minute of every day. And so what we try to do is to identify the matrix or the framework that the decisions are being made in. And when we say decision, we really mean balancing value versus risk, that everybody sort of understands the rules of the game. So in the peanut butter company, the rules of the game are different than in the nuclear power plant. The physics are the same, the engineering's the same, but the priorities, the criticalities, and the consequences are obviously quite different. So we put a different set of rules, and we call them the rules of the game, so that everybody's aware of the rules of the game on how decisions are made in that business context.
Well, couldn't have said it better than myself. Hey, Terrence, we're going to take a break. Everybody hang on. We're talking to Terrence O'Hanlon. And here we're talking specifically about asset management. He's got a wealth of knowledge. He's an amazing man. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Hey, once again, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. If you like what you're listening to, please feel free to sign up for the free podcast as well as the blogs. I'll try to keep it all relevant to your business and hopefully be able to provide some insight into what we do at Industrial Talk and what you do as a professional. Hope to see you soon. Thank you. Thank you for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. Once again, my name is Scott McKenzie, and I'm here with the gentleman by the name of Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon. And boy, off the air, we were talking a lot about, he's got a great framework for asset management that we're going to direct you to. I highly recommend it. It's well laid out. It's got a lot of great information, and it will set you down the right path of asset management. Now, we've talking also, I believe you're a published author. Is that correct there, Terrence?
Yeah, just with my good friend and longtime colleague, Ramesh Gulati, we just published 10 Rights of Asset Management. It's available at Amazon.com, or you can go to ReliabilityWeb.com and click on the bookstore. Highly recommend. It's a great read. Real good guidance for the whole asset life cycle. In other words, from the time you first start thinking about an asset, how to manage it while you're thinking about it, and how to manage it once you need to decommission it and dispose of it, and everything in between, and every phase of the asset life cycle is focused on delivering value.
If you were to look at that asset life cycle there, Terrence, and had to sort of distill it down to, let's say, 3 to 5 points, what would be those 3 to 5 points that I would ask that you would distill it down to, if
well,
you can?
If I'm if I'm describing an asset life cycle, there's a time when we're just trying to figure out, does the business need an asset? And usually you're trying to expand your capacity. I need to clean more water. I need to create more electricity. There's a need. So you're trying to figure out, do we need assets to deliver that need, or can we get the function from existing assets? So if the decision is new assets, now you have to design them. And we want to pay attention to reliability and maintainability and asset life cycle. So you can get assets, you know, less expensive, but you might want to make it more expensive at that point in time because it's going to be less money to operate and maintain it. So there are decisions being made in that in the design phase. Then you've got to create it. Then you've got to either create or acquire. You're either going to build it, a dam or a highway or an airport, or you're going to acquire it. You're just going to purchase a pump or a crane or something like that. Then you've got to operate, maintain it. That's one other phase. And then you, at some point in time, you have to dispose of it. People forget about that, but you can't just walk away from the asset. You have to get rid of it or renew it. It might be wore out. You want to keep it, but you're going to rebuild it. And then there's sort of this nasty thing called residual liabilities. You know, let's just say you threw away 100 old computer monitors, the old kind. You know, that had they had all kinds of harmful metals and
mercury,
chemicals in them.
Yes.
Yeah, you couldn't really just throw them in the landfill. So you know, so it's basically we call it from lust to dust. When you first start desiring an asset to the time it's dissolved into dust, there are things you can leverage, there are techniques you can do to make sure you're getting value at every phase along the way. And the point is, there's usually individuals that are trying to do that at each phase in the asset lifecycle, but they're not working together. They don't have that holistic view across the lifecycle. So the designers are optimizing from a design standpoint, but they're not really paying attention to the operate and maintain phase. And the operators and maintainers are saying, man, we wish we could have talked to the designer. We could have told them this and we could have told them that. And this thing would work a whole lot better because once that thing is designed, the reliability is locked in, and you know there's not much you can do about it at that point.
But really, in today's culture, it's like, okay, that pump failed, or that valve has failed, or whatever it is. And I'll keep it simple because I'm a simple guy. That pump failed. The typical way is saying, okay, that's pump Acme pump XYZ. I'm just going to buy another Acme pump XYZ. And that thought process of saying, is Acme really the pump we need, or do we want to go with a Beta or whatever it might be? And that thought doesn't happen. It's just, oh, the pump has gone out. Oh my gosh, we got to replace it with another Acme. Boom, go, 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 go.
Well, not only that, you're 100% right. Sometimes it's even worse than that. Hey, we better buy two of those or three of those.
Yeah, that's right. We can need an inventory now, and then we'll just have a bunch of them on the shelf right now.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, rather than thinking, I wonder why it failed. I wonder if we can get a pump that's twice as good or a motor that's twice as good. Hey, it might last three times or four times as long.
But it really, even beforehand, is you should know when that let's say, pump is getting ready to fail because you've got the data that's saying that thing's wobbling, it's heating up, it's whatever the data is. Why don't we be at the front end of deciding what pump needs to go there so that we can replace it, be proactive, boom, 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 boom. But that doesn't happen either. It fails. We are reactive. Isn't that not true?
Yeah, it is true. The majority shows that the majority of practices we see in the world is exactly as you describe. And the ironic thing about it is several things. One is that if you were this proactive that you're sort of referring to instead of reactive, you're saving 50% cost over an average reactive performer. So in other words, even you're saving a lot more over the worst reactive performer, but even the average performer, you're spending about 50% less than the reactive average.
50%. You're saying I get a bottom line value of 50%. If I'm proactive, I got value. Is that what you're saying?
You got value, you got monetary value. But the other thing is ExxonMobil did a study on what they call transient operations, when things aren't just operating smoothly. So they measured their sort of time window, and they found that they had less than 10% of their time was in startup, in shutdown, in emergency work. 53% of their injuries took place during startup, shutdown, and emergency work.
What? Hold. You said what, 53% during those time periods? No way.
Yeah, 53%. Now imagine you could have that startup, emergency work, and shutdown to 5%. Well, then you could have your injury rate down to 25%. I mean, it has a direct impact on. So they found that injuries took place at a 5-to-1 level, basically, during what they call transient operations, when something was starting up, shutting down, or shut down because of an emergency repair that had to be done.
See, I don't understand what the resistance is. Tell me what the resistance is from an industrial point of view, because that's hard dollar savings. That's not soft dollar stuff, and it's safety savings, environmental. It encompasses everything, and it's proactive, and you're less. I mean, I don't understand the lack of adoption to a certain extent in our industries.
It's sort of like I'll try to explain it this way. I hope the analogy is good. So let's just say I had the power to see the future. And I told you that your car, which is running perfectly well today, it's going to take you home, going to take you to the store, going to do whatever you need to do. I knew in 30 days from now, your car was going to fail catastrophically. And at the same time, I knew while it was going to fail catastrophically, you had made the mistake of opening the hood and you had your head bent over on that engine, looking to see about the funny sound that you were hearing. And the engine, you know, flew apart. The fan flew apart or something flew apart as you did it. And you got seriously injured as a result of that. Now, I'm telling you today, hey, Scott, you know, we really need to, you know, look at this engine. It's possible we're going to have to rebuild it. Probably going to be, you know, $3,000-$4,000 to do. So you're saying, wait a second, my car seems to be running, you know, really good. I'm not sure I want to just put $4,000 into my car right now. Now, you could ask me to prove it, and then we could run some tests and we could probably prove that. See, the thing is, they're not allowing the engineers and the technicians, the people who know the equipment the best, to do these proactive tests. It's just like a doctor. If you walked into the doctor, you look about my same age, and the doctor said, hey, sorry, Scott, you're getting around 55 or 60. We better start planning your heart replacement, because the average heart, you know, goes 55 to 60 years. Let's start planning the operation. We'll get you a new heart and put it on in. You'd say, wait a second, can you run some blood tests? Can you do an EKG on me? What's my blood pressure? You know, and plus you'd hope he had that information over the, you know, a 5-year, 10-year period and was sort of trending in the wrong direction. They're not allowing the engineers who know what they're doing to do these proactive tests because they cost money and they don't create an immediate result. See, with reliability, the good decisions and the bad decisions are time disconnected. So if you make great decisions today about reliability, nothing good happens today. Everything stays the same. The benefit is a month or a year or 10 years out. But if you make bad decisions, it's the same time disconnect. We're not going to change the oil in the pump. We're not going to align it correctly. Well, bad things don't happen that day. They happen 6 months from now or a year from now, and no one connects them back to the bad decision that was made a year ago. We have a short institutional memory, you know, in most companies. Does that make sense?
It does. And it just connect. Here's the funny thing. So you know, assets are not going to run forever, right? They just aren't. So that pump, it will eventually in some way, shape, or form fail for whatever reason, whatever it might. You have an opportunity to say, okay, I know it's going to fail eventually, and we're going to do our maintenance on it, and we're going to do whatever it is, predictive, preventative, whatever you want to do on that maintenance, on that asset. But what would stop some companies saying, I know it is eventually going to fail. I am going to do some preliminary design work on that particular asset. And so when it does fail, I'm going to have the right decision, the right asset at the right time to be able to do it right. Anybody doing it? It's money. Yeah.
Money.
He just gave the old Johnny Mansell money thing. So it's like, yeah.
And you know, Deming said, you know, constancy of purpose is one of the things that's really one of the deadly sins in corporation. Really what he meant is that these plant managers, the site managers, the mine managers, you know, they're on a career path and they're coming in to run that mine for 2 years, 3 years at a time. They're not really looking at the life of the mine. They're looking at how they can make their numbers over the 3 years that they're there. Well, here's the business genius. What can we do? Well, we can either up the production or save the cost. Well, the easiest path is to save the cost. So they just, oh, well, don't do it. We'll just defer. Now, the next poor schmuck who takes over, you know, the plant or the mine or whatever, he's going to pay the piper, but his career is probably going to go down, while the guy who cut all the cost out to begin with, he's going to get promoted. They're going to think he's a genius.
Wow.
Promoted.
God, that's amazing. Now, let me ask you this. I've been down the road a couple of times with asset criticality rating. Like, you know, that pump might be just a little teeny pump, but from an overall process point of view, that asset has got some incredible value, and it might cost $20, but I want to make sure that I have the proper whatever inventory and so on. But this big pump over here, I can sort of just run it to failure because it really has no significant impact on the process. Do you go into that level of detail?
Heck yes, that's our starting point. Not everything is equal, and it's not based on the cost of the pump or the size of the pump. You know, what do you want the plant to do? So that's why we start with the aim of the organization. But the next step after we define the aim is absolutely, in our opinion, criticality. I before people get hung up and you send me postcards and nasty emails, it's fine. It's fine with me if you don't start with criticality. But the reason we start with criticality, and here's a news flash for all the listeners. You're not going to do everything. So why don't we do the things that are certainly more important than the things that are least important? And if we don't have a non-emotional way to discern that, we'll spend our time doing the wrong things while the right things go undone and could create huge risk for us. We will eventually, the plant will teach us what's critical. But we should know that before the plant teaches us what's critical.
Absolutely spot on. I'm talking with Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon. He has far more knowledge and information about asset management than I don't even know. He's amazing. We're talking a lot about his book called 10 Rights of Asset Management. We've broken down some really key points. We're going to finalize this particular conversation. You just hang on. We're getting ready to wrap it up. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Scott McKenzie with Industrial Talk. I like to learn, and I like to have fun. And when I can put them both together, learning and having fun, well, that's a match made in heaven. That's why I put together a drawing for a Louisiana fish excursion, as well as the 2018 Mardi Gras once-in-a-lifetime event. You can find more about this information, about this two wonderful opportunities, at the Industrial Talk website at industrialtalk.com. Thank you for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. Once again, my name is Scott McKenzie, and thank you. Thank you for being here. We've got a gentleman by the name of Mr. Terrence O'Hanlon, and he's talking a lot about asset management, the tools, the techniques, the processes, all of the good stuff that you need to be in the asset management world. And I'm just telling you right now, listeners, if you're not doing these things, you're not at the cutting edge. You've got to get the gentleman's book, Mr. Terrence's book, 10 Rights of Asset Management. You've got to get on his website when it'll all be posted out there and get some information. We're all about learning. Here's a gentleman that is all about giving that content of asset management. He knows what's going on. So we're going to wrap this this segment up. So once again, Terrence, we've got the design phase. That's one. What was number two? I think we were talking specifically asset lifecycle design.
Once you design it, then you got to create it or acquire it. You either got to build it or you got to acquire.
Design, acquire, operate and maintain it, right?
Yep.
Dispose and remove it. And then you said something a little bit about residual liability. That could be dealt with at the beginning of any decision, right? At the beginning of this asset life cycle. Boom.
If you know, again, take that computer monitor. If you had the choice to buy one without mercury in it and one with mercury in it, you know, it may not seem like that big a deal at the front end of the project, but at the back end of the project, it's a huge decision.
It is. It is. So let's sort of give you some. I want to now. You have a website. What's it called?
ReliabilityWeb.com. It's one of the oldest and deepest knowledge sites, and it's all free for asset management reliability. There's videos. We record our conferences and we post the videos. There's a lot of articles. There's a lot of tips. There's a search engine. I think it's powered by Google, so you know it works pretty good. You can find just about anything with Boolean search on the website.
You out on Twitter?
Yeah, with Twitter @ reliability.
You're at AT reliability or reliability? No, you got reliability?
Reliability is my Twitter handle.
Are you kidding me? That's fantastic. My gosh.
I'm an old guy, man.
Apparently so. You were one of those new dot. Wow. That's a rocker.
Yeah, Twitter. I was on Twitter on the first day, so.
That's fantastic. So you got reliability web. You got at reliability on your Twitter. Nobody should forget about that particular site, that's for sure, or that Twitter handle. Do you have a Facebook page?
Yes. I'm going to go look at it right now. I think it's at reliability too. Let me just find out. And then
you're out on LinkedIn all over the joint. You've got LinkedIn everywhere.
I got LinkedIn everywhere. Oh, it's facebook.com/asset manager.
Wow. Look at that, man. It's great to be an early adopter because you just got some great stuff that, you know, you don't have to sit there and try to figure out how to name your company. That's fantastic. Like I said, you're out there on LinkedIn. You got Twitter. You got Facebook. You've got that website, Reliability Web. You've got a book out there called 10 Rights of Asset Management. You guys are a publishing company. You guys are a conferencing company. And you guys are developed that framework. You pretty much have the handle on everything reliability. And you cross all industries. It doesn't really matter. I'm telling you, man, I'm jacked. I'm jacked to be able to even know you. And, of course, your assistant called Maura. And she's amazing, too. And we're going to have that conversation, too. She's going to be on this podcast because what does Maura do, Dan? What does she represent?
She's actually not my assistant. She is a global relationship leader, and she's the director of Women in Reliability and Asset Management.
Now, I don't mean to offend anybody, and so I take that back. Don't be mad at me, Maura. Don't. It was just I've been interfacing with you, so... But anyway,
somehow she's mad at me as a result of that.
No, don't be. We'll get you on the podcast because I'm sure you have some incredible information too to impart on us too as well. And it's got to happen. So thank you very much, Terrence. I really appreciate it. I know that you've got to be running away right now and you've found time in your schedule. I am honored. I know that everybody that's listening on the podcast is better because of you. Guys, get out there and figure out that asset management and do it. Anything else? Anything else, Terrence?
Come down and see us at IMC-2017.com. That's December 11th through the 15th. 1,200 people, 34 countries. They live, eat, breathe reliability and asset management.
Okay, let's slow that one down because I want to make sure that I write it down. I forgot, and I'm terribly sorry about that. You've got a conference coming up in December. What is it again?
It is the 32nd International Maintenance Conference. We call it IMC-2017.
Good.
It's at www.imc-2017.com.
And at that IMC-2017.com, you'll find all the information you need to know about attending that conference. And it's in which part of Florida?
Bonita Springs on the Gulf Coast.
Love that place.
Best sunsets. Just big enough to be interesting and small enough to be very nice.
Fantastic. All right, everybody. I think he threw down the gauntlet. You got to be there. You've got to go to that IMC-2017.com. Go there. Find out information about the conference that's coming up in December. He has everything you want to know out there. Reliability Web. He's got the Twitter. He's got the Facebook. Everything you want to know. Thank you, Terrence, very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll see you again soon.
You will.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. I really enjoyed that interview. Terrence knows his stuff. Once again, get out there. Get to the reliabilityweb.com. Find out more information. You need to be at the cutting edge of this information. And they're so gracious and wonderful to just, there it is, man. Be a part of that program. Be a part of that movement. That's a big deal. And thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for all of the guests that we've had on the show this year. And I just wish everybody the very best in Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much turkey. I've already injected mine. It's out there. It's cooking. It smells great. This is such a great time of year. Have a wonderful week. Be safe. Enjoy wherever you're going. And I'll see you next week. Have a wonderful time.